From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is a special edition of the Closing Market Report presentations from the 2025 Farm Assets Conference, Why You Should Use the In-Rate Calculator. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You know, during the December conference, we were joined by a panel of experts, including John Jones, a soil fertility specialist from the University of Illinois, Gary Schnicki, an agricultural economist, also from the U of I, and Laura Gentry of the Illinois Corn Growers Association. In an era of fluctuating input costs, these three believe corn production is about maximizing profits rather than yields. Today, you'll listen to them break down how the In-Rate Calculator and the Precision Conservation Management Program are helping farmers protect both the local watershed and their bottom line by finding that sweet spot for nitrogen applications. We'll begin with soil scientist John Jones.
I'll show a quick snapshot of the corn nitrogen rate calculator website on the left. Sites for some of the trials that we're running this year. But this is really more of a reference slide of the snapshots from the corn nitrogen rate calculator website. And this is really the landing point for the database that feeds into the guidelines that we communicate out of University of Illinois Extension. You'll see the URL up there. You can select your region in Illinois, your previous crop, and then enter the price considerations for corn and for fertilizer. You can do it on a per ton or per pound of nitrogen basis. And then that will kick out an output that you see in the bottom left. There's also some graphs and figures and summaries. But essentially, if you haven't seen that before, this is the default output that will occur. We've got some exciting projects to look at how we can refine that to a more granular scale, but not necessarily have the data to communicate that yet. But one exciting thing is that we really ramped up the data production side of the amount of response to nitrogen data going into this effort. They're a little hard to see on the screen. There's supposed to be U of I orange, but you can see the dots across the state. Annually, in the past few years, we've usually ran under the advisement of Dr. Nafsinger and Dan Schaefer with IFCA, around 30 to 40 trials a year, and we really kind of ramped that up this year and this summer. I think we ended up having about 91 response trials around the state, and I think that's a pretty realistic number to continue on. These are a combination of on-farm and small plot trials. About 85% of them are on-farm strip trials, so we're pulling data off of commercial scale investigations on nitrogen rate, some on nitrogen timing. And the idea going forward is we'll have some pretty comprehensive reports for those individual farmers involved in the trials, but then summarizing some regional data as well. So if you don't see a dot around where you're farming, come talk to me, and we'd love to work with you on some on-farm research. This is, again, a table that I think can maybe be referenced more in discussion, but this is just output from the calculator, and it's in the context of specific anhydrous ammonia prices. We look at the 0.5 and up to 0.52 range. That might be considerable when we start thinking about spring end prices. But this is a different way that data is summarized. So looking at moving from regions in the north, central, and southern Illinois, previous crop, and then the pricing scenarios. One thing that you'll see is there's only one single value here that's communicated. If I'll go back and show the output of the calculator on the bottom left of the screen here, you'll see a range, and that profitable range is communicated as a $1 per acre range in maximum return to nitrogen, or the economic return to that last pound of N that was applied. So I'm not showing the ranges here in this table, but generally they're about 12 plus or minus 12 to 14 pounds of N on each side of these values. If you've used the calculator in the past and you've maybe looked at it recently, one thing that we did, so the numbers should change because we update them annually. And this year we also started dropping data that was over 10 years old. That was another change. Previously it included data back to 2006, and we just thought some of the yield levels and some of the more cropping system components, and there were some odd years, didn't really represent our scenarios that we're dealing with now. So the data should look different in the winter of 2023 moving into the winter of 2024, and now will be updated eventually with the 25 data. Something we did drop was the continuous corn consideration for the southern part of the state. If you are growing continuous corn in the southern part of the state, from the data that we at least have, and we don't have a lot of trial data, and that's why I dropped that option in the calculator, was because the data was over 9 to 10 years old, and I just didn't think it was rigorous enough to provide a recommendation from. So we recommend, and there's some language up there about following the corn after soybean end rate if you are growing continuous corn. But you can also, you know, advise that or adjust that depending on previous crop production in your given field. This is just another way of showing those ranges. So if you, again, go from corn following soybean on the top, corn after corn on the bottom, north, central, and south. So again, it's just a different way of communicating those ranges. You'll see those N numbers. That's the number of trials that is represented in the output of the data. And I think that's probably one of the strengths of this process of identifying optimal nitrogen rates and communicating them, is that it's a very data-driven process. So this is, I'll say, probably one of the higher amounts of N rate trials that any state in the country has ran to create a database that we can have some trust in and replicability of. These are just some other on-farm research trials that we've got in our research group going into 2026. If you're interested, feel free to reach out on those. I'll say one thing on P, and if that's all right. When looking at so one of the large efforts that we're doing is also working on updating phosphorus and potassium recommendations. We've got a large network of trials going around the state, and what we usually do with this as well is look at the yield response to phosphorus and potassium fertilizers, but also look at the ROI to those fertilizers, and sometimes categorize that in different crop price scenarios. And the thing that we're looking for is that this break-even point, it matches what we're seeing and where we're plateauing in yield, or where we stop seeing a yield increase with phosphorus or potassium fertilizers. I think this gives us a little more confidence in the recommendations and guidelines when we're comparing yield responses to an ROI consideration. So I'll stop there, and we'll just have these slides for options, but you can cut those off.
And I want to take you back to some of the slides to begin with. First, if you want to find the N-rate calculator, search Google N-rate calculator. It will show up. You can do corn N-rate calc. .org, but search Google for N-rate calculator. I do have a couple of questions. Oftentimes, for our part of the world, it'll come up around 185, thereabouts, 185 pounds of N that need to be applied. What variables can a farmer input? So can they input the price of N?
Yeah, so there's four main variables that go into this. Your region of the state, your previous crop, the price of corn, and then the price of nitrogen fertilizer. So those are the input variables that are right, so living as the calculator
exists. So you right can now. Say, I expect to raise 200 bushel corn or 225, and I think it'll be worth $4.20 cash, and it will.
There's no yield number that's an input, so it's just the price of the price.
Oh,
of the
there's no yield number.
Yeah, because we found not a strong relationship between the yield at optimum N rate and the optimum nitrogen rate that's applied.
Ah, gotcha.
Due to the colors of soil you see on the map.
Okay.
So you just input the price of corn grain.
And then it gives you, it optimizes the nitrogen rate for.
It shows the nitrogen rate that pays for the last bushel, it shows the nitrogen rate that produces the last bushel that pays for the nitrogen. So the last pound of N applied is paid for by the last bushel produced.
So it shows me 185 pounds of N. Is that what I set the anhydrous rig to?
That is not what you set the anhydrous rate to, but that would be what you do. That's a product base. But these are the pounds of N per acre.
So you're counting how much you're counting N and what nitrogen applied plus what else?
Nitrogen applied. So you can also, because you can choose your fertilizer source, it will give you a pound of product output as well. So if you see the pound of nitrogen applied. For this scenario, the optimum N rate was 183, and the pounds of anhydrous would be 223. This includes all of the N that's applied. So when we look at the data,
when you see the 223, you have to subtract your MAP and DAP and those
correct.
Things, right? That's what I was trying to get to. I'm sorry, I was getting there the long way around, I suppose. But this is not This is not the number you apply.
That's the number.
This
just
is the number
total
you apply, but this is not the anhydrous
there's
rate.
There's only
number.
An N source indicator there. So this kind of brings up another ongoing effort that we've got right now to build a state-specific calculator that has more options. And we're working with some other collaborators at U of I to do that so that we can maybe get a little more granular than just North Central and Southern Illinois, splitting things like prairie and timber soils and different soil associations. One thing about the data that's included here and interpreted is it does count all nitrogen that's applied in the fall as MAP and DAP and your specific end source. And that the decision to do that is really comes from research results where we've compared the available N in fall and spring applied DAP, and we did not see a difference between those two or spring applied UAN. So the fall N could be counted on in your total N budget.
Okay, I know you'll get this question, so I'm going to ask it. I'll ask you a question first. Who remembers the nitrogen formula for the state of Illinois? Anybody? Oh, surely you. Some of you used it.
It'd be 1.2.
There it is. Yeah, I won't say it out loud, but that's the one I'm talking. Minus 40 pounds for, and we always get asked, is there an in credit for soybeans here? And it doesn't appear to show up. Why?
The answer is that the change in available N, soil available N, from a previous crop of soybeans and corn is already represented in how the data is interpreted. Because you pick your previous crop, we have N rate curves or response curves to nitrogen for both scenarios. So when you pick your previous crop, we're already seeing how that corn would have responded following corn or soybeans. So the change in soil N availability after corn and after soybean is already represented in the data set. We don't really call it the credit the way that the 40 or 50 pounds would have been considered before. Interestingly enough, to the 1.2 number, I wish we'd just stop talking about that. Because
that's why I didn't want to say it out loud.
Most farmers, if you look at your end budget, are nowhere close to that. And that's considering the output of this or not. When we look at on-farm research, we're bouncing between 0.85 and 0.95, more likely than not. I think we need to stop mentioning that number in decimal and go off to some results of relevant data.
The first time I heard the 0.9 number was in the mid to late 1990s at some point, but we were well above that, using still the old 1.2 formula at that point. Let's turn our attention to a long-running research project now called PCM, Precision Conservation Management, that the Illinois corn growers started to put together. I'm going to let Laura give the history on this one with Gary Schnitke at the University of Illinois. But Laura, why don't you start with kind of the history and background about precision conservation management. This, on the flip side, is about nutrients coming off of your properties and trying to control them in some form and what might be the best opportunities to do that in a whole bunch of different ways. Laura?
Thanks, Todd. So everybody, cast your memories back to the fall of 2014, and think about what that fall was like. If you remember, and it was already referenced up here once today, the Des Moines Waterworks lawsuit. Does everybody remember that? So that was happening in the fall of 2014. And then there was also, who remembers the huge algal bloom on Lake Erie that fall, that late summer and fall? Does anybody remember that? When nobody could drink the water, nobody could cook with the water. You couldn't even give your dogs and cats the water. They were warning you about even bathing because it was a harmful algal bloom. That was happening at the same time. The city of Toledo, Ohio, at that time was under a do not drink the water ban for a couple of weeks. There was just a lot going on in the fall of 2014. And back here in Illinois, we also had the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy was about to be released. It actually came out in July of 2015. But we had all the stakeholders were engaged in developing that nutrient loss reduction strategy. And here at Illinois Corn Growers, we knew that that was going to be a really relevant document, that when it came out, everyone was going to be talking about it in the Midwest and maybe around the country, because it wasn't just Illinois. There were a total of 12 states that had to develop the nutrient loss reduction, they called them nutrient reduction strategies. Illinois is the only one that referred to ours as a nutrient loss reduction strategy, emphasizing that it's not that we want to reduce nitrogen, it's that we want to reduce the loss of the nitrogen and the phosphorus. So 12 states were doing this, so it was a big deal all up and down the Mississippi River at that time. And it was just clear that there were going to be long-term ramifications from that document. And in response to that, Illinois corn and a lot of other agricultural groups in Illinois as well were thinking about how we were going to address water quality issues. And Illinois corn started a program in 2015 called Precision Conservation Management, PCM. And we launched it in 2016 with the help of a Regional Conservation Partnership Program grant from NRCS. We got $5.35 million to start that program. And that was a ton of money back then. That seemed like a lot. And it was it still is. If it's just yours, it's a lot. But we are now on the 10th year of PCM, and the whole idea behind the effort of the Precision Conservation Management Program is that we work one-on-one with farmers. So every farmer who enrolls in the program has we call them a specialist, a precision conservation specialist that works directly with them. It has a very strong data component. And these guys, I look at them because they both know very well all the different pieces that go into it. And we sit down with farmers 2 to 3 times a year and collect data, and we put it into our secure data platform, our farmer portal. And it includes information about your management decisions. So every farmer puts in information about every pass that they make across their field, and the details of that in terms of what their equipment that they used were, what was the pass for, was it a tillage pass, a spray pass, planting, harvesting, and we assigned the equipment to that and the inputs. Were you applying, were you spraying an herbicide, a fungicide, were you applying a fertilizer, how much of the fertilizer, what type of fertilizer, and so it's got a quite a lot of data points in there, but our specialists are there to ease the pain points of getting that data into the program. So it's a very data-intensive program. And every year in February and March, our specialists come out to the farmers in the program and deliver a custom-made report to them, a RAP report, a resource analysis and assessment plan. And that RAP report spells out all the different, the data that we took, summarized by field, for that year and all previous years, and it shows it to them in terms of their tillage decisions, their nitrogen management decisions for corn, and their cover cropping decisions. And then it allows them to be able to compare their own economic decisions, their own economic outcomes and agronomic outcomes with those of farmers who are near them, like in the same region. Of course, not by name or by field, but it's at an aggregated and anonymized level. The farmers can say, oh, this is my one-pass tillage system with a vertical till for my soybeans, and I want to compare it to how farmers were doing who grew corn, grew soybeans with no-till or with two tillage passes. So it's a benchmarking type of system. And what Dr. Schnicki helps us to do is to take and assign costs for every single one of those passes that they make. We assign costs using data that he gives to us, and so the farmer can actually compare their own net bottom line with those of farmers who are using other practices. And so that's the big idea behind the biggest part of the Precision Conservation Management Program, helping farmers to make decisions, financial decisions, about conservation.
Gary, how did you get involved?
Todd, don't sound so impressed.
I just wanted to get to Gary. I was just going to skip the rest of the way over you.
So that year I did a sabbatical with Illinois Corn, and that was one of the things that I worked on was helping develop the procedures for collecting the economic information with associated with a PCM.
He went on vacation with Illinois Corn for a whole year.
So that you can look at it that way. Most people would pick a different place to go. Just so we all know that.
Usually it's a sabbatical overseas somewhere.
Bloomington is a good place to go, by the way. So, yeah, I was happy with that.
In the 10 years of data, Gary, what are the most striking things you have learned?
So, well, we'll start with nitrogen. You know that MRTN, PCM would show that that is correct, that 170 to 180 pound range is the profit maximizing range. We do see higher yields occasionally above that, and that's not every year, but on average it's above that, but the additional bushels do not cover the cost of that. That's particularly important now, because you're going to have 420 corn and 850 anhydrous ammonia. That's what I looked at. That's the last value from the Illinois Production Cost Report. So you're looking at a relatively low cost price, high price input. So if you look at those charts, John was using 450. That would be optimistic by my ag economist look at things. The other thing that's really interesting, and by the way, there's a lot of farms that apply well above that level, and we're talking well above that level. So we're not talking slightly above, well above. If you're higher than MRTN, you're doing, this is the prediction that I would get from that data. If you're above MRTN, you're doing more tillage, more passes applying nitrogen, you're applying more fungicides, and you're applying more herbicides. So, by the way, and that's most people. So, when you're above in one profit maximizing level, you're likely above in all of them. So here's what I would tell you is maximize profits, not yields. There's only probably about only one person that comes out to your farm that suggests lowering inputs. And that's the person won't. But the person is the FBFM field staff who says cost matter, right? The rest of the people, we can spend $10 and we'll get an ROI of 150%. That's pretty much the sales. And you add up all those sales pitches and we have inputs that are well above the profit maximizing levels. So maximize profits, not yields.
There's a lot of room for improvement. Did the ag economist in you put a number on how what that dollar bill amount is per acre?
So, you know, it's significant. And again, we see this and it's not just PCM, it's FBFM as well.
The farm business, farm management.
Farm management. You're in a commodity-based business, right? Corn and soybeans, primarily. Commodity-based business. The way a commodity-based business producer differentiates themselves from the other people is lower cost. It's the only way. So if you want to maximize profits, you have to have lower cost. And, you know, if you begin adding it all up, you can get $40, $50 per acre pretty quickly. So
it's about efficiency then, PCM is to some extent. And Laura, about avoiding regulation in the future, I think, is one of the, had must have been one of the reasons that the program began to begin.
It was entirely the effort around it, and knowing what was happening with the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy being released, all the other black eyes for agriculture that were happening back in that period of fall 2014 and 2015, it was all around concern of regulation, and it was more than this idea that many people have about, you know, keep the government out of my business. It was about maintaining the flexibility that we had, and you know, we'd already lost a great deal in terms of other regulatory requirements, but this was about maintaining the freedom that we have to be able to respond to climate issues, to markets, to other economic factors that we need to have some flexibility around, without the constraints and being hamstrung by onerous record keeping and regulations for around our fertilizer applications.
And I think, but I'm not sure that this is the right timing, one of the things that came up at the very end of the policy section was the Des Moines Water Works, and that was an issue. It was a scary issue at about that time, am I right?
Oh, it was, yes. Every farmer in the Midwest was aware of the Des Moines Water Works lawsuit and was keeping their eye on it at that time. Every ag magazine that came out had an article about what was happening with it.
John, I suspect you learned a lot about that over time, and you and your agronomist friends probably talk about the movement of nitrogen and other things through the water systems. How well and how easily does it move, and what happens when you overapply?
We've got a leaky system by nature. When we look at the amount of water, nitrogen is going to follow water in most cases, both up and down, as we lead to water-induced volatile losses of nitrogen into gaseous forms, or if we lose nitrogen through tile lines, or if we lose nitrogen leaching through non-tiled fields that tracks right along a frangipan. If anyone's in southern Illinois and has frangipans or root limiting layers that are about 18 to 24 inches deep, water can track horizontally on top of those as well. And this is just an inherent part of the system. It's leaky. And one of the interesting things that myself and some colleagues have found when looking at what nitrogen is found in the tiles is it's not necessarily fertilizer nitrogen. The majority of that nitrogen is from organic and in the system that's been mineralized and then lost. We have a lot of organic matter in Illinois soils. We've introduced oxygen in many different ways, and it burns up organic matter. That's also how our plants get nutrients, is that organic matter has to burn up. I think there's three things maybe related to what we've talked about so far that I would want to hit on. One is that, interestingly enough, if we're talking about yield levels at different rates of nitrogen that are applied, the difference between the N rate that maximizes yield in a lot of our trials, and they're very relatively high yielding trials, when the mean average is 268 to 272 across a wide range of soils in the state, it's about one to two bushels is the difference between maximizing yield and then maximizing profit. And that's not always the case. Some sites, the bushels or the yield drops a little bit more when you get down to the economic optimum nitrogen rate, but it doesn't vary that much. And in fact, that's one way that we check our data set to see, was this maybe an odd site year or odd trial, is we look at the difference between the N rate or the yield that, or the yield when it's maximized versus the yield that led to an economic optimum end rate. Two more things is that, interestingly, when we look at nitrogen losses and what nitrogen rates exacerbate that, we really don't see a big difference between, I'll say, 30 pounds of N applied, so if you only put starter N on, versus the optimum end rate around 175 to 180. It's after that, and the 30 pounds after that rate, that we start to see an exponential increase in nitrogen loss. Interestingly, we see that the same way in phosphorus. The soil test level that optimizes yield with P, that between 0 P applied is generally no difference in P loss in surface runoff or through tile lines. And that was part of the work that I did in graduate school in Iowa. Speaking of the nutrient loss reduction strategy there, a lot of the research that I'll say fertility specialists around the Midwest have done is present in a lot of the nutrient loss reduction strategy targets and application or practice efficiencies. But with phosphorus, it's the same thing. Not until you increase soil test phosphorus 20 to 30 parts per million past the agronomic optimum, that's when you start to see exponential losses of P, both subsurface and with runoff. So I think those are something to think about, and maybe it's not always talked about a lot, is that agronomic efficiencies also usually parallel with environmental efficiencies in reducing losses.
Thank you. That is a really insightful thought. I had not come across that one. In PCM, you talked about efficiency some. The number, Gary, of passes, tillage passes. First, I don't know whether, and Laura, you may have an idea, I don't know whether this is related to keeping nutrients on the property, probably is, but it certainly is related to efficiency and maximizing efficiency. Gary, can you talk about number of passes and tillage passes, that is?
So, PCM regularly summarizes data, and we do it in no-till, one pass, two pass, and two plus pass systems. And you'll see that if you go to the business case for conservation, you'll see that on the website. The one pass systems versus the no-till systems will often have roughly the same profitability, sometimes a little bit higher, sometimes a little bit lower. There does appear to be a bit of a yield advantage for one pass sort of system. When you go to two and two plus pass systems, we don't see an increase in yields. And all you're doing is, if you're not getting an increase in yields, and we don't see a reduction in herbicide or pesticide cost. In fact, pesticides don't vary much depending on the tillage system. You know, if you're not getting a yield advantage, all you're doing is adding cost. I mean, and we're putting in every tillage pass will be roughly $15 an acre, so you see a sort of that reduction in cost, or excuse me, in returns.
And from the water quality side, how much difference does it make? Or from we've had issues with windborne dust storms as well in recent years.
Well, from the water quality side, and I was going to add this on based on John's comment about it's the extra, you know, 25, 30 pounds that farmers are putting on of nitrogen, that insurance nitrogen that they're putting on to be sure they're not leaving any yield on the table. It's that amount that they're losing that's coming out of tile lines, and that is going to, if we don't curtail this loss of nitrogen leaving through our tile lines, is very likely to result in lawsuits or additional regulations down the line. And I don't say this to scare anyone. I don't say it because it's what anyone wants to see happen. It is the most likely scenario for the next line of regulation in the Midwest is going to be around water quality issues. And this is what I think is so interesting. Lowell Gentry, my husband, but his work in central Illinois finds that the average nitrate nitrogen losses from tile lines is 27 pounds of nitrogen per acre. And you just heard John say that it's usually, and I'm comparing myself, the MRTN values with what the average PCM farmer is applying, it's anywhere from, well, there was a low number in 2021, farmers, the average nitrogen above the MRTN, it was only 8 pounds. The average farmer only applied 8 pounds above the MRTN that year. But in all other years, that value is ranging from 25 to up to 48, and that's the average, pounds above the MRTN. And the MRTN works. It literally is. It's an economic model, and it does exactly what it's supposed to do. It does predict the most profitable nitrate-nitrogen rate. And in the PCM program, the only years where we have seen that it didn't work were in those years when the soil conditions were just perfect, or the weather conditions were just great, and the soil released more nitrate than it was predicted to. And in those years, the MRTN overestimated the amount of nitrogen needed. It has never once, Todd, never once in the work that I've looked at, under predicted the maximum nitrogen rate. So farmers can feel like it's a good conservative estimate, and very few farmers seem to believe that. And Emerson says it all the time, it's a conservative estimate. But John, do you feel comfortable with what I said there?
No,
When you say conservative, you mean we're going to get most of the yield?
Yes, I mean it's under. It's predicting a nitrogen rate that you will not be under applying nitrogen at the MRTN. That's what I'm trying to say. And if you want to correct or add to that.
No, I'd agree with that. And one of the ways that we show that in some of the data sets is you'll see a percent yield achieved, and it's usually at 99%. When we think about these studies. And one of the you know, I'll say criticisms maybe of this approach is that yield isn't considered. We talked about that earlier. But there's the lack of relationship between yield and optimum nitrogen rate, made up really caused by the amount of nitrogen from our soils, is the difference there. Now, there's certain cases in the southern part of the state where you have relatively lower nitrogen mineralization rates or conversion to plant available, there's a little more of a trend between yield level and optimum nitrogen rate. One of the things that I think is important, though, to break apart there, though, is that, and what I just mentioned, is that the yield level isn't necessarily kicking off any need for more nitrogen. The question of does that corn plant need more nitrogen when it produces more kernels is yes. But what we're finding is that the soil keeps up in many cases with that additional requirement of nitrogen. Now, interestingly enough as well, what we're finding is reductions in nitrogen concentration in the grain as we've increased yields over time. So there's some evidence that our hybrids have become more efficient at using available nitrogen that's present as well. And so all of this is happening at the same time. One thing that's really interesting in the data set is we look at the yields at zero nitrogen, or 0 to 30 pounds of N, which may have been the lowest nitrogen treatment. Those are increasing steadily over time. What's the difference? Breeding, really. I mean, a lot of good things happen when you breed for higher yields. Things like nitrogen use efficiency, leaf angle orientation, everything like that. When you breed for higher yields, other components of that plant usually are optimizing themselves to create those more kernels per plant.
I've got a question. For one trip comparison, I fall strip-till nitrogen. Is that one trip?
The question is, strip-till would be one trip across the field, and we would separate out. But yes, it's one strip unless you're freshening it, and then you get two passes, but one trip.
Other questions? Yeah.
Okay, it's all well and good to do this, but are there any things coming down the pike to help us out? Like, we've been tissue testing. We're looking for something to measure mineralization during the season, so we've been told spoon-feed nitrogen through the season. Is there anything out there that we can say in April, May, June, and see how the mineralization is coming? Because this year, we raised 280 to 290 bushel corn on that same thing, and for no reason. It was dry at the wrong times and all that kind of stuff. So is there a way to figure this out?
Yeah, so one of the things that we implemented this year, I feel in production agronomy research, you're either coming from the top up or the bottom down. I'm a soil scientist by training, soil chemist, and soil. I also call soil fertility soil chemistry with dollar amounts. And I think what we've implemented this year in a lot of those trials, and we haven't got the data all analyzed yet from the yields, is that we're measuring soil nitrogen at different times to create a database to predict that. So the soil testing for nitrogen kind of boomed and busted. There were certain states that ran pre-plant nitrate tests, pre-side dress nitrate tests. There was a presence of kind of an organic mineralization proxy of the Illinois soil nitrate test that existed for a while. But they've all boomed and busted. And the challenge has been, if you're just measuring nitrate, that it's a very quick snapshot of what's available there. And it's more of a site characterization than you can say, you need to apply 150 pounds from a 18 part per million PSNT pre-nitrate sample. So there's work on that. I would say we don't have the tools yet to say this is the N mineralized. There's some efforts in modeling, and that's really where we have to combine a lot of the work our group does, and we try to measure everything. We're in the lab and in the field quite a bit, collecting a lot of data. We're working with modeling teams like Dr. Caillou Guan's group at University of Illinois to say, now can we start to predict that? My hope is that, you take, and this is, again, kind of pie in the sky moment, but I don't think it's worth, I don't think it's bad to shoot for these things, is that you start out with the optimal nitrogen rate that's maximized profit in the last 10 years data set. And as you move to incur different environmental changes in a given year, that adjusts to consider what you're talking about. Were we coming out of a dry fall where there happened to be residual nitrate? Usually residual nitrate in, let's say, fall of 2012 got flushed out pretty quickly in 2013. And that was why there was a big, I think it was the NWatch program that Dr. Brown worked on, and Dan Schaefer and Emerson did as well, looking at what was hanging out there. And my hope is that then as those processes are occurring that's leading to more or less soil nitrate availability, we can adjust that optimum end rate. Are we there yet? No. Just the simple answer. But we're trying to come up with proxies and circuits to look at that.
Just so we know, every time a spoon feeding nitrogen means more passes across the field. Every one of, what's that?
Unless you're
irrigating, which maybe. Every time you go past the field, there's a cost. Just remember that.
So I wanted to ask both John and well, you can jump in, Laura, on this too, but I think it'll be data that Gary has worked with. Is there very much of a difference in when the nitrogen is applied? So whether you're fall apply, spring apply, side dress, how many times you make a pass. And I want John, I've heard Gary's several times. So John, what do you know about this and what does your training tell you?
Sure. We've got a few papers in review on this and we talked about this summer at a nitrogen use efficiency conference. So one of the things that's interesting when we compare optimum nitrogen timings to when we'll say that corn plant is taking up 7 pounds of N per acre per day is that the fertilizer timing research doesn't necessarily align saying you have to have your N, you put your N on exactly when the corn plant is taking that up. And that's because of what happens to fertilizer when we immediately apply it. It get a little bit may get taken up by the crop immediately, but a lot gets mixed into the cycling of microbial biomasses or dead microbes in the soil. Your fertilizer gets immobilized pretty quickly. So the timing research is a lot more muddy. Now, where there's some more clear trends, so a paper we've got in review right now is a comparison of all spring versus all fall anhydrous ammonia. What's the difference between optimum nitrogen rates and yield? We don't see any difference in yield between our optimum nitrogen rate being applied all in the fall with anhydrous and all in the spring. Now, there's some big risks to take with doing that, and I don't think many people are putting all their N on in the fall anyway. But the comparison is kind of a stark contrast. And there's about an 18 to 24 pound N optimum N difference or lower optimum N with the spring N. When we start to compare timings after planting, things get a little more muddy. In the southern part of the state, where you can lose a lot of N by volatilization, let's say if you just surface apply UAN in dry conditions like this year, then it pays for getting it knifed in at side dress versus a later Y drop where you're just setting it on the surface. Everything is always going to be environmentally dependent on what that corn crop sees in a given year. But that's probably the biggest challenge. And I think one of the things that's shown up in a lot of nitrogen timing research, and we've got a new project this year looking at that that'll be on long-term across the state, is that getting at least half your N up front usually pays off when we have those low nitrogen availability years. Now the challenge, I think, and what I'd like to see is our ability to adapt as between planting and V6 environmental conditions come about. Then you can adjust maybe what your side dress rate is going to be. Because in earnest, what the major decision is what your side dress end rate adjustment is going to be. Sometimes whatever your base rate N is what it is for your whole farm maybe, unless you can start to vary that. So that's something we're looking a little more into, is how do we really dial into not just the total N rate recommendation, but specifically that side dress N rate recommendation.
So in PCM, we divide it up by fall, mostly fall, mostly pre-plant spring, mostly post-plant, and then there's three-way applications. Fall does not turn out to be the most profitable, does not, And the primary, one of the primary reasons is the nitrogen inhibitor that goes on with it. And that's typically a $14 to $15 cost. So even though you're putting anhydrous ammonia on, you're adding that $14 to $15 cost. You go, and pre and post plant, we don't see much difference in our data, whether most is pre-plant, most is post-plant. I would note that if you want to put nitrogen on, the least expensive way, put it on is anhydrous ammonia. And that has its own sort of issues. The three-way did not also did not have the highest profits. And one of the things that's going on there is you got three passes through the field. And the other thing, for whatever reason, the three passes through the field follow the same thing that they do a lot of other things, so they also had higher nitrogen rates. So so if we could find some three pass systems with MRTN rates, we might see something different than we've seen. Those do have differences as far as losses, which Laura might want to say something about, but they're the obvious ones. The one thing I would say is don't forget that every time you go across the field, you're adding cost. So, spoon feeding, three passes, every pass is a cost.
Any other questions out here?
Yeah, I attended your webinar about a year ago, and so I'm pulling data from that, and I remember seeing strip till wasn't as profitable as I thought it could be. And I was wondering, like, if you're banding your P and K and your nitrogen and you're eliminating a floater truck pass and you're banding everything and maybe possibly lowering rates, why aren't you seeing that as profitable as other?
Yeah, so I would say we need to do a better job with our strip till. We always say this every year when this comes up, and we did reference. So when you're looking at strip till, there's a number of things that get thrown in there. Strip till, and then the minute you add a freshening pass, those two things get in there. If you just do a strip till pass without the freshening pass, you're going to be comparable to a one tillage system versus a two tillage system. For whatever reason, our strip tillers also tend to put on higher nitrogen rates. If we bring those back to MRTN, strip till looks better. So it's not the strip till, is my estimation. It's what some people do in addition to the strip till, like having higher MRTNs, doing a freshening pass, or any of these other things. But if you just did a strip till, come in and plant, and stay with in MRTNs, strip till will be comparable to the other systems. And we just need to make that more explicit in our in the data presentation. So that's your answer.
I was just writing something down as Gary was talking about that. Last fall, we did start a long-term study at least three sites around the state, at Urbana-Monmouth and Orr Center. We'll expand that to two more sites this year, comparing optimum end rates by tillage system. So strip till with fall chisel and a spring freshener compared to full-width chisel and field cultivator, and then a no-till system. The data from 1 year, now we need time to see the tillage effects of some of these systems, but the data from 1 year shows that the difference between full-width tillage and strip-till system, there was no change in the optimal nitrogen rate. No-till was a little bit shifted off, but some of the especially two of the locations, we had a little bit tougher with the dry conditions. If anyone's recently converted any field to no-till, that's not usually the easiest first year, and this wasn't in Champaign County doing that. But the comparison between full-width tillage and strip-till, we didn't see any difference at those three sites following corn or soybean. They were similar. The previous crop changed the optimum end rate much more than full-width tillage and strip-till.
Let me get one more thing in there about strip-till. We would We believe in strip till, and it's got a lot of great advantages from a water quality perspective. We know that that is true when you, especially when you band your phosphorus with it. So one comment that we're seeing, I think this is important, is that not every year is created equal. And what we've seen in the last 2 years with the financial environment being what it is, with relatively lower crop prices, relatively higher input costs, especially nitrogen fertilizer, we've seen the farmers pulling back on their nitrogen rates with strip tillage. And in these years, these past 2 years, 23 and 24 data have shown that strip till has been some of the more, strip till and no-till both have been the more profitable systems, even relative to like the one-pass light. And I think a lot of this has to do with the popularity of these vertical till systems that happened around 2017, 18, 19. You just saw all these farmers, we had a really high yields and farmers wanted to manage their residue, and they saw vertical till as a great way to do that. And they did well with it, but they were also, they weren't going crazy with their input rates, and some of the strip tillers were over applying some of their other inputs. What we have seen in 23 and 24 is that, especially on lower SPR fields, we've seen that strip till was, I believe, the most profitable system in 23 and 24 for corn production, just in those 2 years. And then for high SPR and lower SPR, it did really well. No-till and strip-till did really well in those 2 years that were like this client. I'm trying to be a fake economist now. But, sort of the economic environment we find ourselves in now.
Just one more thing. We haven't mentioned this yet, but if you want to reduce nitrate flows from field, put cover crops from corn to soybeans, and all the organic N that may be going into the soil, or excuse me, into the water, will be tied up by the cover crop. And that is quite certain from Lowell's work and everything else. And we can, with some CRP and other sorts of money, make that a break-even proposition. So, and maybe longer-term profitable with the right. But that's one thing that to keep in mind. Corn to soybeans, cover crops, zero rye on there, will sequester nitrogen and reduce nitrates in water. So,
Laura, I'm going to have you wrap up. Two things I want from you. How many acres are actually in PCM, and how do they get involved if they want to be?
Great, thanks. So right now there's 660,000 acres in the PCM program. Right now we have a little over 600 farmers. We have between 400 and 450 in the state of Illinois. And we are enrolling more farmers right now. So there is room in most regions for that we are in. By the way, PCM is not in every single county in Illinois. We're in about 52 counties in Illinois, so half. But if you want to see if you're in a region that we serve and you're interested in enrolling, we would love to have you or farmers that you know. And you can find the website at precisionconservation.org, or you can reach out to anyone at Illinois Corn Growers, and we will put you in touch with the right folks.
John, any final word from you?
The biggest thing right now, we haven't really talked about things like soil testing to this point in the nitrogen discussion, because usually soil testing isn't discussed, but this is a time when we just talked about this over at the Soybean Association's headquarters yesterday, that this is a time when you can identify parts of fields that really aren't going to respond to applied nutrients, or that really are going to need applied nutrients to recover potentially lost yield. And so it's really a good time that the ROI for identifying what your soil's got in it pays off. That's my final comment. Now, Gary.
Gary, you have one, I know.
Maximize profits, not yields.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. He, John Jones, soil scientist at the U of I, and Laura Gentry, who is the water quality specialist at the Illinois Corn Growers Association, made a presentation titled, Why You Should Use the In-Rate Calculator and PCM at the 2025 Farm Assets Conference. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.